operation, then prepare. Do so. And of course, you have long-term storable food. You've got, well, you've got just various things that you need for preparedness. One thing that I kind of missed the boat on early on, and I was educated when I went to a conference recently, seed banks, Texas Ready seed banks. They are rated the highest in the world, and for good reason. First of all, they contain regionally appropriate open pollinated heirloom seeds. Hybrid seeds are good for only one garden. They don't reproduce true to type. That's why it's necessary to purchase stable heirloom seeds. Texas Ready also uses only certified seeds. Now, most seed bank companies don't because they cost more. Texas Ready, well, they believe you and I were worth it. And germination rate on their seeds is just outstanding. You can ask Joe, as a matter of fact. He's got a garden. You know,
I didn't see it yesterday. When we were coming back and forth from Russ's.
But I keep hearing about it.
On my front porch, I have probably about 100 different seeds that are germinating and they're sprouting up, and the ones I planted a week before the other ones are about ready to be moved into the actual garden. So I got to get pictures of that, and I'll bring them in and we'll put them up here with Texas Ready. But they're all Texas Ready seeds, and I'm just surprised at how fast they're growing and how healthy they look.
And
for me being an amateur novice who knows nothing of gardening.
Hey, join the club. Texas Ready Seed Banks, the official seed bank of the Hagman and Hagman Report. Each Texas Ready Seed Bank contains 80-plus varieties of vegetables and fruits, including 8 dual-purpose herbs, culinary, medicinal. The larger banks come with training manuals, which teach you how to garden properly, and that's what I need. But the number one seed bank company in our view, TexasReady.net. That's TexasReady.net. One more time, TexasReady.net. Our guest is Matt Bracken. His website, Enemies Foreign and Domestic. If you haven't read his books yet, do so. They're so timely and they're so well written, and there they are right there. If you're watching this broadcast via YouTube, there they are. Okay, so I highly recommend them, and Mr. Bracken is absolutely 100% very well versed, in my view, into current events. And we were talking right before the break about potential for or likelihood of a civil war. Boy, it just seems to be pining out there. The ideological divide is great indeed. And
what really gets me about these Antifa, as they're labeled, anti-fascist, it would be like back in the day the KKK naming themselves the anti-racist, because we see that they are completely intolerant of any type of ideology that they don't agree with. Everything is considered hate speech. Everything is considered, you know, everyone is a Nazi who doesn't embrace their policies. And Mr. Bracken, we were talking about hate speech. What do you make of, we've seen, especially in the 90s, when you had, a huge surge and boom in the Bible industry and in evangelism, you heard a lot of, you can believe what you want, but don't shove your beliefs down our throats. You see it also in the abortion battle, where the people who are pro-choice and pro-abortion, they have the slogan, keep your hands off my body, you can't govern my body. And
that's a fallacious argument. All of them are.
Well, right. But then you have this, this from the same political camp, this Antifa group, where they say they're anti-fascist, but they use fascist techniques and fascism to oppress anything that they oppose. And it's not only enough for you to accept their belief system, but you have to believe and agree with their belief system and go along with it. Otherwise, you're an intolerant bigot. But this issue of hate speech versus free speech, we've seen politicians like Howard Dean. He's come out and said, well, hate speech is not protected by the Constitution. What do you make on this battle of hate speech versus free speech that we're seeing in the public?
Well, I think that they're losing this battle on optics. Dean is an idiot. He's always going to be, tagged with the Dean screen. this works a lot better in Europe, where they don't have a First Amendment. In Europe, they can pretty much beat people down to be afraid to say anything on social media. If you criticize, the Muslim mass migration, You know, you can get a visit from the police. You can lose your job. So it's much more effective in Europe. In the United States, they get pushback. So I think that we're actually winning that war. Even if the, you know, MSNBC and CNN don't cover it, Americans do see what's happening. This is why Trump won. The media can, you know, promote a narrative, but they can promote fake polls, which are really just a psyops, a push poll, but they can't actually get people to go out and vote. So I'm not as concerned in the United States about free speech, because in a sense, they're doing us a favor. They've been stealthily brainwashing our kids with cultural Marxism for at least 20 years, but now it's coming into the open. It's actually, you know, they're showing their face, and their face is a black mask. And what is it with Democrats and masks? It used to be the KKK, now it's Antifa. But, you know, when you have to hide your face, there's a reason. A significant number of the people that have been arrested or have been outed, especially out in Berkeley, it turns out they either worked for University of California, or they're you know, an adjunct professor at some other college, but they you know, they have to hide, and it's not a signal of strength when you have to hide. So I'm not as concerned about you know, having our free speech stifled. What I'm more concerned about is, as they're outed, as they feel pinned in, these 4chan and Reddit people, they not only added that Eric Clanton guy, the college professor, but they're making a database, because these guys go to these rallies, things like sneakers, backpacks, sunglasses, they're connecting them from rally to rally, and at each rally they might have a few different clues. And this is what the FBI used to do, but you know, now with modern technology and a virtual investigative team made up of volunteers on you know, on Reddit and 4chan, I think that they're going to get more desperate. That's when the radicals among them are going to go weather underground, either to make bombs or, more likely, to use the weapon of their perceived enemy, the assault rifle, in a false flag type of an operation. But at the end of the day, we're going to wind up in a civil war in this country, and it won't be a rally. You know, people, when they see Antifa's mixing it up with base stick man, they think, well, that's fine if you want to go out and do that, but I just want to stay in my house, you know, watch television, go on the internet. But if a civil war breaks out, what people have to understand is the civil war is going to be at your doorstep. There is no more anonymity. You know, unless you live way out in the country with a mile-long driveway, and God bless you if you do, you know, if you live in a typical suburban house, if you get somebody coming up your house at 4 o'clock in the morning and unloading a magazine into your house, that's a bad night. And unless your house is made out of, you know, ballistic material, mine isn't, that's the type of war it's going to be. It's going to be the pizza man with a shotgun, or it's going to be a fake FedEx box left on your front porch that explodes when you or your kid touches it. You know, the kind of war that we're going to have is going to be at the granular level, because, sure, you don't have to go out to a rally, but you're not going to be able to avoid the Civil War because you didn't go to a rally. You're going to be in the Civil War because of something you wrote on the internet that draws some lunatic to your house at 4 o'clock in the morning with a Molotov cocktail. That's what the Civil War is going to look like.
In your morning,
it's going to be very ugly.
I got to tell you, I had an incident, and I'm not going to get into it, but it really awakened me, where somebody had known my political biases and political positions, and I had no clue who this person was or is. But as this individual drove by my home, recognized me, what I stood for, and made it clear that he was not very happy with me. And this was 2 weeks ago. All right. Now, having said that, which surprised me, because the civility is dropping, I think, and I believe that people are getting more and more, forward and outspoken. But you said some things here. A lot of people want to know, and I know you describe in your books You're very descriptive about things in your books, folks. Enemies, Foreign and Domestic, grab his books, Matt Bracken's books. But he says some things. What would a civil war really look like? You said some things there that even making me think right now.
Well, eventually, not only would I think that it would be helpful if people study the Spanish Civil War, the Dirty War in Argentina in the 70s, and also the Northern Ireland period known as the Troubles. All of these are hallmarked by false flag operations, death squads made up of off-duty policemen or secret policemen, or secret police that are using cutouts, you know, either gangsters or other people that they control through blackmail and other means. You'll see things like corrupt police departments actually using narco gangs as their thugs, because they to a certain extent control them. You want to keep your drug house going. You want to keep your brother out of prison. We want you to go and take out this right wing troublemaker. That's the type of a war we're going to be fighting. So it's not just the guy that actually pulls the trigger might be a tattooed gangbanger, but he's doing it on the orders of some corrupt cop or corrupt DA who controls whether his brother is getting out of prison next week or he's in for another 10 years. That's the type of leverage that the other side is going to be able to use. But once this war starts rolling and people are very afraid, because there are these drive-bys happening, there will be an action-reaction phase. But eventually, the big prize is always going to be the electric grid. And people that are living in a more rural area, if they feel that that they're being totally shafted by the leftists in the city, at some point it's going to occur to people that all we've got to do is cut off the electricity and the city dies. Because a modern city is virtually, and not only a city, but it's more dramatic in a city. It's literally like a moon base with a glass dome. And the glass dome keeping out the vacuum of space is called electricity. Our cities, our culture, our society at large, it cannot survive without electricity. You have riots if the EBT system is down for a few hours in one city. It immediately goes to riots. That's the sword of Damocles hanging over us, is our need, absolute need, just like a patient in an ICU hooked up to a blood machine and a heart-lung machine. We can no longer live just walking around. We're virtually strapped into a heart-lung machine. And if somebody pulls the plug, we die. So once a civil war starts really going and there's assassinations, bombings, highway snipings, things like that, I wrote something a couple of years ago. A lot of my short stories and essays can be found on my website. One I would point people to is When the Music Stops, How America's Cities Will Explode in Violence. I wrote that a couple of years ago, but I think it's still on the mark. Once this starts, eventually electricity becomes the big prize. Our cities, if they're perceived to be the enemy, the megapolis, all it's going to take is a farmer with high-powered rifles, not to get specific, but you don't need a Manhattan Project PhD to figure out how to pull the plug on a city. It's very doable. And not that I'm saying that's the only way it could happen. Our enemies could do it, and not only can they do it, what makes it more dangerous than, say, a nuclear missile strike, nuclear missiles come with a return address for mutual assured destruction. Iran could target us with a cyber attack but make it look like North Korea did it. That makes it much more likely to happen. Or in the middle of a civil war, rural people might say, the hell with those city people. I've had it with them. If I'm not getting fuel deliveries, if I'm not getting my fertilizer and my seed, and I'm starving out here in the country, well, I'll be damned if they're going to import food and distribute it in the cities. So you take care of the electricity to the cities, no more city. Of course, then you have millions of people will be pouring out. And then it's just completely anarchy, and there's no crystal ball that can foresee how that goes. But I wrote a short story called Alas, Brave New Babylon. That's also on my website, on my essays and articles and short stories page. But, it can be brutal because without the food conveyor bringing food into a city, it's our cities are basically like a Swiss watch. It has to run perfectly, and it will run perfectly. You know, a Rolex will run for 1,000 years. A self-winding Rolex will run for 1,000 years. But all you got to do is shove an ice pick through it, and maybe you only damaged one cog on the whole Swiss watch, but the whole Swiss watch stops. And that's how our cities are today, where our entire society, but particularly our cities. If the electricity goes down, if the banking system goes down through cyber attacks or a bank collapse, then it's game over. And that ultimately, this is the big problem. I don't get frazzled about like abortion versus anti-abortion, or is this tax bill a new good tax bill, or is this new budget a good budget? Because we're still in a terminal glide slope. It's a math problem, not a political problem. There's no president that can fix it. You know, it's like we've got it. We're in a 747. All four engines are on fire. You know, and there's the mountain up ahead. I'm glad we got a new pilot, because the old pilot was a kamikaze. But even, you know, Sully Sullenberger isn't going to be able to fix the 747 with four engines on fire. It's a math problem. It's entitlements that can never be paid. Eventually, the curve goes, you know, vertical, and there's no more way to pay for it. There's no magic Mr. Fusion, you know, from Back to the Future out there that's going to cold fusion our way out of this problem. There's no miracle in the hat. We have a math problem in the end, not a political problem, and there's nobody that can fix the engines and get everything back, because it's just gravity taking us down at this point. Mathematical gravity. And, you know, I don't know if it's going to be this year or next year or 5 years from now, but it's not sustainable. Unless maybe we do come up with Mr. Fusion, or, you know, there's the second coming of Jesus, or something else like that. But otherwise, eventually the cities explode, because we can't pay to feed them. You can't have a society where half of the country is sitting at home and being fed for nothing. It's never happened in history, and it's not going to happen now. It can work for a while, but it's not going to work forever.
Mr. Bracken, what do you believe? We talked about a lot of flashpoints to get us to that point where we could see our cities overrun through a civil war. What are you most concerned with is bringing us to that point? An international conflict like a world war, or a civil war, you know, based on, you know, ideological differences? Or do you find something else that might be...
Absolutely, it's civil war, because you have it's like tectonic forces. It's like tectonic plates going against each other, grinding against each other. And then there's going to be a snap and a release of energy, and that's going to be our civil war. The tectonic plates are, you know, leftism with their allies in Islamism, and versus, you know, constitutional conservatism, and neither side is going to be swayed by the other. I'm not going to become a communist, and the communists are not going to become conservatives and believe in the Constitution. So these two tectonic plates are grinding past each other. You know, Berkeley and things like that are little tremors, pre-shocks. But the big shock is going to be when there's a major assassination, like somebody blows Air Force One out of the sky and blames it on who knows who. I don't believe almost anything that I see now. For example, in Syria, the poison gas. My first instinct is false flag. You know, I'm not saying it is. I don't have any proof one way or the other. But I no longer just say, oh, like a cow chewing the cud, watching the news. Oh, darn, that Assad, he's using poison gas. My first instinct is my own side's lying to me. Plenty all the time. Happened in the past. It will happen in the future. But I think that it'll be a big event, like a major assassination. Let's say, you know, the president, God forbid, something like that. Or somebody's going to do a magazine dump or multiple magazine dump into a liberal, you know, Earth Day type rally, leaving right-wing literature conveniently around. And then there's going to be hell to pay. Or a black civil rights leader, you know, a BLM rally getting shot up, something like that. I remember in 68 after Martin Luther King, it was very tense times in our cities, very tense times. Riots in a dozen American cities. And I think that we are primed for that. It could be a Dylann Roof kind of person, a misguided soul, or it could be a false flag. But, I think that we're in, you go out west and you go into the forest and they have these big, signs as you go into the national forest. We're on warning ultra red hot. No campfires, too hot. That's our country right now. So if Korea explodes or not, I hope it doesn't, or Iran gets the bomb, I hope they don't. But our own city, we have the nitroglycerin piled up, the dynamite and the gunpowder piled up in our cities already. So all it's going to take is the right spark, and our cities are going to go crazy. And if anything takes down, even without a civil explosion, just something like a banking failure, anything that takes down the electronic benefit transfer system, that'll be enough to set it off. So it could be a benign event, just some kind of a enemy Stuxnet virus gets loose and our computers aren't working. All we're getting is garbage on our computers. You think that can happen? It can happen. And the next thing you know, you go to the gas station, you can't get gas. Then what? Well, every Walmart will be looted within 48 hours, and I don't know how you come back from that. That's not something that FEMA can do. FEMA can take care of Katrina, but they can't take care of 100 Katrinas, which is what the grid going down would be.
And they couldn't even take care of Katrina, so.
You know. Right.
Well,
right. But with all 50 states focusing on Louisiana, yes. But not if every state has a Katrina-level civil disorder going on after a collapse of electricity or just collapse of banking system or collapse of EBT system.
Definitely some interesting things that we need to, always keep in the back of our mind, because, as you said, it could be a benign event, like a computer glitch or, one day with the EBTs not working or people don't have access to their money or, gasoline.
We won't know. We won't know.
Mm-hmm.
If this happens, it'll just be a couple guys in the backyard saying, what's your theory? Was it the Bilderbergers? Was it North Korea? Was it an act of God? Was it, a tree fell across a transformer line and started a cascade? We might just all be in the dark and not even know. But eventually, the system of feeding people, a third of the country, just being fed for social peace, it's a new social contract. We'll feed you if you don't riot and burn up things. Well, if we can't feed them, once you get an entitlement, you don't consider it an entitlement. You consider it a right. So people that are suddenly without their EBT card aren't going to say, well, it was good while it lasted, but it really is kind of against natural law to get fed for nothing. It's the Rudyard Kipling, the copybook poem. But eventually, natural law has a way of reasserting itself, except this time technology has built such an edifice so far out over a precipice that when the artificial supports, the electricity, the EBT system, when they go away, there are going to be millions of people that can't feed themselves and are very angry because it's like you took away their air or their water to take away their EBT card. They're not going to just sit at home. They're going to go to the store and loot it first thing. Every store. And I don't know what you do after that.
As you said, it's going to be very difficult to come back after that. Matt Bracken, a man I regard very highly, and certainly I believe is an American hero, an American patriot, obviously, and his website, Enemies Foreign and Domestic, his books, incredible foresight that Mr. Bracken had written.
We only have about a minute left, Mr. Bracken. Which one of your books is your favorite?
The one I'm writing right now, which will be out in a couple months. But, anybody that's interested, all of my books just on my website, about the first quarter of the books are on the website, not just like a teaser chapter. So any of my books, just pick one by the cover or any other reason, and like the first, 10 out of 30 chapters are on the website. So if you like it, you know, read them or read my essays and short stories that are also, I have a links page. They're mostly out on the internet. And I have a collected anthology also on Kindle. All my books are on Amazon and on Kindle. I would recommend any of my books. You can read the first quarter to a third for, you know, just they're on my website. And the same thing with my essays and short stories.
And I can't wait for your next book to come out. Thank you for continuing to write. We really appreciate that. Your insight is second to none, as well as your information, your education, and, I want to say inspiration, because there is some there, but certainly the flat-out, here's-the-way-it-is kind of approach. Love it. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Thank you.
That was Matt Bracken, enemiesforeignanddomestic.com. I want to thank him for joining us tonight. That was a very informative 3 whole segments breaking down a number of issues from North Korean situation, what's happening in Syria, the political divide here in our country, the domestic situation, and the economy, and the
he's
the
right about the right for dangers. Yeah, he's right, man.
It's not going to take much to push us over the edge, especially in the climate that we are in today. When we come back, it's just going to be my father and I. We're going to do a little news and wrap up the show. So don't go anywhere. We have one segment left on this edition of the Hagman and Hagman Report.
Visit HagmanReport.com for the news and articles that matter most. Stay tuned. We will be right back. There
shall be great tribulation, such as was not since the beginning of the world to this time. No, nor ever shall be.
Folks, I'm going to direct your attention to MasterPreps.com. MasterPreps.com. Wow. MasterPreps.com, the sponsor of our show, MasterPreps.com. That's MasterPreps.com. Take a visit there. High-quality items, made-in-America items. I mean, anything, everything you possibly want, from cooking utensils, cooking frying pans. It'll blow you away. Absolutely, Erickson.
It's insane. I mean, wow. Look at the products.
Folks, visit MasterPreps.com. Again, welcome to the Hagman and Hagman Report family. MasterPreps.com. I mean, wow. It's insane.
MasterPreps.com. Are you ready for what comes next?
Hi, I'm Grace Gonzalez from Caring Close in the Woods. We are an American family-owned company founded and built on skills and knowledge gained from responding to 18 major disasters in the U.S. and around the world. We found that most people don't have enough food and water to survive, let alone any medicinals to save their life. We're offering 25% off our must-have American Heritage Armies kit. It contains 12 homeopathic armies, a booklet that goes over everything in your kit, and our brand new book, Major Disasters Lessons Learned. Just enter coupon code HAGMAN. In life or a disaster, you must be able to take care of yourself. You may not be a medical doctor, and your grandmother and your great-grandmother probably weren't either, but they still knew how to minister to their family's health issues, and so can you. Check out our American Heritage Armies kit at www.changelessandwoods.com. Your life may depend on it.
Hello, everyone. This is Joe Charles, the guy whose voice is heard announcing for the Hagman and Hagman Report right here on YouTube and across the Global Star Radio Network. There have been many people wondering whose music is being played during those breaks. Well, you guessed it. And we're very pleased to announce that all that music and 11 brand new songs from the CD New Jerusalem is set for release on April 10th for download on iTunes. That means you can help support my ministry and be blessed by this awesome, inspiring recording. I have been fortunate to work with some phenomenal musicians from around the world that helped us put this recording together in the studio. Simply go to joecharlesmusic.com and click on the iTunes link. Or, if you'd rather have a CD, we'll send one right out to you. Just leave me your email and we'll get right back to you. And thanks to Doug and Joe Hagman for making this all possible. God bless.
you live from our radio and television studios here in Northwest Pennsylvania. Thank you, Global Star. Thank you, Todd and Don and everyone there. Thank you so very much for broadcasting our show. Also BTR. We're on BTR as well as YouTube Live and YouTube via Archive, BTR via Archives, Global Star via Archive. We're there. We're everywhere. Thank you so much. You know, it's so much has happened over the last several weeks with respect to assaults on the media, the new media, the independent media, the truly independent media. It's amazing to see so many attacks. I don't think we've ever lived through a time like this. And I would urge everyone to really support those people who support in prayer, support in unity, support by word of mouth, especially the sources of information, where you get your information from. And I think it's so important. By the way, folks, we're going to be at Awaken to the Shaken at the end of the week, Friday night and Saturday night, May 5th and 6th. Can you believe it's May already? I mean, think about this. We just went, what happened to New Year's Eve and day and stuff, right? It's May 1st, May Day. So we're already well into the second quarter of the year. It's phenomenal. But anyway, May 5th and 6th, Awaken to the Shaken. If you're even within a day's drive of Gurnee, Illinois, I don't know how many seats are left. We'd love to see you out there. We'd love to meet you. I know that we're going to have some people that we're going to meet. Just go to paulbegleyprophecy.com or hagmanreport.com. Click on the link. Register if you can be there. It's going to be a relatively short, brief, intimate conference. When I say intimate, just several hundred of our friends, I guess, right? But Russ Dizzar is going to be there, and Pastor Paul Begley and John Robertson is coming, and it's going to be really on point, and there's going to be a lot of information given. Trust me when I tell you. Plus water baptism as well. And Pastor Paul wanted to make sure that we mentioned that. Also, you know, speaking of good books, Matt Bracken's written some great books, as so has T.C. Joseph, This Generation series of novels, thisgenerationseries.com. Book one is Precipice. Book two, Pentecost, and book three, Penance. This man, T.C. Joseph, number one, he's an incredible guy. Yeah, likable, incredible, very well-versed, very articulate, just a tremendous writer. The books have gotten great reviews from Blue Ink and Kirkus. You cannot find, in my view anyway, a better series. It's fiction, but it's not really, because the events on the horizon are really laid out in these three books. And folks, go to thisgenerationseries.com or buy them on Amazon. Again, book one is Precipice, book two is Pentecost, and book three is Penance. This is a guy, by the way, I'd love to have coffee with. And I'm going to get the chance to. I really am. He's an incredible writer. And very gifted. All right. Now, and as, by the way, as Matt Bracken said too, and I just want to kind of reemphasize this point. You know, we don't know. Stay right there. We don't know. I hit my microphone. For those listening and not visually on this, I hit my microphone and locked away. The news of today. We don't know if we're going to. We don't really know what's going to happen, but we know something is going to happen. Something is things are happening right below the surface. You might look out over the landscape and see a kind of a serene pond, maybe a few ripples here and there. But man, is stuff churning under the surface. And again, this fight that we're in, I believe, is multifaceted and asymmetrical. The fight in which we are involved is asymmetrical. You've got all of the groups, the Obama-related groups, the Woods Fund, the Joyce and Annenberg Foundations, the Barack Obama, William Ayers is coming out now, the anti-Trump specific activist groups such as Indivisible Guide, well, as defined by error, as evidenced by indivisibleguide.com, and Indivisible, the group Indivisible, MoveOn.org, RefuseFascism.org, the Obama Foundation, big part, Organizing for Action, that began, of course, remember back Obama, the community organizer, and evolved into OFA. You've got 2017 TMBCO, Bob Ferguson, Judge James Robart. You've got various protest groups, very specific to delegitimize President Trump. You've got the immigration groups from American Friends Services and American Immigration Council to Urban Justice Center, and on and on. Then you've got Arab Muslim groups, or your black activist groups, for example, BLM, Black Alliance for Just Immigration. You've got at least two dozen black activist groups, and you got Latino activist groups, and you got Arab Muslim immigration groups. You got pro-Palestinian, pro-Iranian, anti-Israeli activism groups, and anti-Israeli activism groups. Man, are they fighting the fight right now? They're engaging. And notice that it's difficult, really, to engage in any kind of conversation without some level of anti-Semitism creeping in. And it's always veiled under the Zionist veil. And have you noticed how antagonistic? You see, it's Zionism is one thing. The nation state people of Israel is another. Just like we talk about the deep state, for example, that is behind the mechanism of the United States, behind the leadership of the United States, the deep state. There is a difference between that deep state and the people of the United States. A huge difference. So it is with Zionism, the political Zionists, or even a step above the Kabbalists and such. Okay, you've got that, but that's always, it filters into this anti-Semitic, anti-Israel movement. And that's a shame. It really is. And I am not, I just see this ramping up. And it is troublesome because Israel, when you look at end times prophecy, Israel is at the epicenter of end times prophecy. And so the relevance cannot be understated in my view. So having said all of that, then you've got the confluence of events with Syria, Joe, and North Korea, and as we here in America come to the ideological brink and the divide, and along with perhaps the banking system collapse, and people might say, well, that's never going to collapse, or we're never going to get to an all cash or no cash system. Of course we will. It's just a matter of time. I happen to, very quickly, and then I'll turn it back to you, Joe. I happened to be up very early this morning, and I was just going through some postings of some, just kind of going through the various forums and what have you. And what I'm seeing here on the internet, in different groups, aside from the political divide, the ideological divide politically, what I'm seeing is this. Those people who are attempting to warn others like we are, and you might say, oh, I'm just so sick and tired of hearing about this. The people who are attempting to warn others about the real threats that we face are suffering the greatest attacks on the planet. Whether those people are in Germany writing about the immigration, or in Canada writing about the anti-blasphemy laws, or in the United States writing about whatever it is we collectively or individually may be writing about. The fight has been engaged. And it is a fight that is, for me, looking at this, it's for all the marbles, because once the independent media is taken out of the equation, you've got nothing. You got nothing. It's the basis of everything, I believe. Whether it be from InfoWars to us to True News to, I mean, you name it. You've got nothing. So.
Some political news out there. There's an interesting headline out of the Wall Street Journal. And we just had Trump's 100 days, the first 100 days, and we saw, we see what's going on with, if you look on Drudge, there's a, you know, a big mess with the Republicans' budget that apparently has more pages than the Bible. It's a $1.1 trillion spending bill that basically, they gave up every concession the Republicans did to the Democrats in this bill. It has more pages than the Obama stimulus package. It does not include border wall funding. And they, the pundits and people inside Washington expect a battle between Republicans and Republicans. And, this is, I believe this was the bill to keep the government funded. But back to Trump's first 100 days, Democrats ponder whether resisting Donald Trump is enough. Party activists believe, are wondering if Democrats need to do more to resist Trump. The Tom Perez, the head of the DNC, sent out an email about the Democratic Party's position in Trump's first 100 days. And in the email, he wrote, "Yesterday we marked Donald Trump's 100th day in office, and much more importantly, 100 days of resistance," declared a weekend email message from Party Chairman Tom Perez, the message that used the word resistance 3 times. And they're starting to ask the question, is resistance is not enough, they're saying. They said the anti-Trump focus of much of the labor and Hillary Clinton campaign was not enough. They argue that the Democrats need to lay out a new agenda, their own agenda, that should start with a focus on democracy in all of its forms. And they go through a list and whatnot. But, you know, a lot of the grievances are things like this. With Maxine Waters, she was interviewed yesterday on MSNBC. And she actually, I saw 3 separate articles with 3 completely different storylines about her interview. And this was one of them. Waters comments on Trump's illegal immigration, and Maxine Waters is a Democrat representative from California. She was interviewed by Joy Reid on MSNBC, and during the interview, Joy played a clip of Trump decrying a surge in illegal immigration, where he said, despite voter concerns, the federal government did not enforce immigration laws. Well, what was her response to that? She goes on to say that his remarks, that is absolutely racist, she says. She calls it dog whistling. Waters told host Joe Reed before arguing that Trump used Latinos to create fear in his constituency. She also called Trump a pathological liar. Now, I find it just very interesting. We see this over and over when it comes to these insane liberals commenting on what Trump is doing, specifically with illegal immigration. We had last week the lady from The View, Joy
Behar.
They said that, and Andrea Mitchell, both of them came out separately and said that they're no longer going to refer to illegal immigrants as illegal immigrants. They're going to refer to them as undocumented citizens or undocumented aliens. And Maxine Waters here is calling Donald Trump's remarks, saying that we're having a surge in illegal immigration, racist. So you have people who are not going to, you know, the word illegal immigration, the first word in there is illegal, illegal immigrant. They are here illegally. Nancy Pelosi, she came out yesterday and made a remark that the only illegal immigrants that should be deported are those who commit crimes. This is the mentality we're dealing with from the left. being called racist for wanting to enforce laws that have been on the books since forever. You know, the not having the mental the mental capability to understand that being here illegally is already breaking the law, and the refusal to even identify illegal immigrants as illegals by saying that they're, you know, undocumented citizens or undocumented aliens. It's truly astounding the level of the mental blockage or ignorance that we see from the left, whether it is done on purpose, whether they're paid to do it, or whether they're really, you know, that incompetent that they do it. It's yet to be known, but it's all crazy regardless. I want to know how many people saw this story. This is something that might be a little filler piece in some of the mainstream news. The FBI translator who went rogue and married an ISIS terrorist. There was an FBI translator who held top secret security clearances who was in 2014 working to fight ISIS in Syria. Now, this the rogue employee, Delina Green, lied to the FBI about where she was going and traveled to Syria in 2014 and married a key ISIS operative that she had been assigned to investigate. She also informed him that he was under investigation, according to court records. And it goes on to say, Green saga, which has never been publicized, exposes an embarrassing breach of national security at the FBI, an agency that has made a mission of rooting out ISIS sympathizers across the country. Well, this is a CNN report, so some of this is obviously false. But it also goes on to talk about, did Green receive favorable treatment from the Justice Department prosecutors who charged her with a relatively minor offense, even in the face of her treason? And then they asked the judge, the Justice Department prosecutors asked the judge to reduce the sentence in exchange for her cooperation. We remember Bergdahl. Was it Bergdahl who was the soldier who deflected and went and joined Al-Qaeda or the Taliban? That we saw President Obama exchange prisoners, terrorist prisoners from Guantanamo Bay, for the return of Bergdahl. And now, you know, it seems that this trend continues, not only from the Obama administration, but the Obama administration holdovers and the people in the Department of Justice. And, you know, we still see the support for the rebels, which is nothing more than Al-Qaeda and you know, other terrorist organizations. But I wonder, you know, I'm sure this is a unique case in the fact that the FBI tasked to assigned to this terrorist actually went and married the terrorist, but it makes you wonder how many times things like this happen where people use the information that they were given under top secret security clearance to inform the enemy of what is happening and who's under investigation, and to try to save them from being prosecuted. I'm sure it happens a lot more than we really know about.
Yeah, you know, I just want to throw this out there. What we're seeing today, especially the things that are not being reported on, and some relate to, for example, the pedophilia, the huge pedophilia elite criminal enterprise. I don't know. We could describe it in any number of different ways. I want to mention this before we get before the end of the program here this evening. We know, I think it's important to really state this, because this cannot be allowed to go away. The sexual abuse of children, the human trafficking that we see going on, it cannot be allowed to just go away. And I don't think it will. Just briefly, I just want to kind of touch on a few things. I do know. In fact, last week when, I don't know how many people, it really doesn't matter. I had a couple of reporters from the Rolling Stone magazine here talking to me, interviewing me about this. But, I would hope everyone listening to this broadcast, understands that the pedogate pedophilia is as difficult as it is to really speak about. It is true. All right. Now, some elements, for example, as they were portrayed on some forums and such, as they are understood to be Pizzagate, not true. There are some diversions, there are some misinformation, some information that was not accurate, and misdirected attribution, which that's a good case for that. But one of the things I just want to, and I'll be talking about this in May at the conference in Gurnee, Illinois. One thing I would really want people to really focus in on is the currency that is the children, the currency that is the organ harvesting. And speaking of organ harvesting, George Webb, W-E-B-B, has been on our program before, does a great job in talking about rat lines and such, and also the investigative reporting he's doing is incredible. It's great work. George Webb on YouTube. But I just want to say that, like everything else, if you go back into the 60s, and I would compare what's taking place with some of the people involved in revealing the pedophilia of today. If you go back into the 60s and compare it to Dorothy Kilgallen, for example, there's just an article about Dorothy Kilgallen released, I think it was today or yesterday. Dorothy Kilgallen was a writer. She wrote a column for newspapers. She was on What's My Line, I believe it was, or To Tell the Truth, I think. One of those old game shows. Well, Mark Shaw, the former legal analyst for USA Today, CNN, this is written about and talked about the suspicious death of Dorothy Kilgallen. The reason I bring this up, if you look at the template back in the 60s after the biggest crime of the century, the murder of JFK, and the witnesses, the people involved in the investigation, or at least involved in saying, I'm going to break this wide open. If you take that template of people who have died or were murdered, and you take it and superimpose it over today, over people today, and look at some of the suspicious deaths surrounding the investigation of Pizzagate. Breitbart comes to mind, and some people might say, oh, that's just hooey. Well, okay, say what you will, just look into that. But one of the biggest points, and I'm going to end with this and kind of toss it back to Joe here, but one of the biggest things that I've noticed is the largest pushback and the most threatening communications I've received have been related to this topic. Whether it's what is known, what people know as Pizzagate or Pedogate, in the larger sense. We are certainly pushing forward with our investigation. We do know that, there have been, in fact, there was just somebody arrested here, 148 charges. I think it was in West Virginia. Of child abuse. Take a look at folks, I want you to take a look since the first of the year, how many charges of pedophilia or child sexual abuse or child trafficking, kidnapping, whatever, or even child pornography. Note the significant rise of charges. It is significant, and it is something that it should be telling of something larger taking place going on right now. I just want to bring that up because I think it's important, because this does propel a lot of what we're seeing here going on domestically. This is really the Achilles heel of the deep state elites, and this is where they're most vulnerable. However, this is where a lot of people are more vulnerable, even some on the conservative Republican or conservative side. Those people who espouse morals publicly but then are compromised by this privately. Keep your eye on this. We're going to be pushing forward with additional information on this, the additional revelations on this, folks. But I just wanted to bring that up. The template hasn't changed from the 60s. That's why I mentioned Dorothy Kilgallen. There's another person, I believe her name was Mary was it Mary? Yeah, Mary Mayer, who was the same template. All of these people back in the 60s surrounding, for example, the Kennedy assassination, and look at the subject of Pizzagate or Pedogate, whatever you want to call it, larger case of Pedogate, same template. It's very interesting as we see this progress. But, Joe, I'm going to turn it back to you. I just wanted to kind of throw that in there. So it's kind of a bookmark, full stop. And when you, by the way, one last thing, when you see people, and especially the people who are either journalists or say they're journalists or authors, when you see them, disparage the citizen journalists and investigators for this topic, do yourself a favor. Take a second look at them. All right. Just be very wise as to who you might follow. Very interesting events taking place. Go ahead.
Yeah, we know that today is May 1st, May Day. And just giving you some updates on what's going on there. We have protests that have broken out in Los Angeles as well as Seattle. But apparently a lot of Trump supporters showed up in Seattle and took over the Antifa protest, took over the stage that they were protesting from, and shut down their rally. But at the same time in Portland, you have a bunch of violence and arrests as May Day protests in Portland turned it into a riot. Police determined it was a riot, and some police cars have been destroyed. And at least six protesters have been arrested in Portland near City Hall, where police canceled a permitted protest over unsafe conditions, and now they've determined it to be a riot. The protesters ran around not only smashing police cars, but broke windows of a Target store and a number of other buildings, including the Portland Federal Building. And the police started to swarm in, and after they determined it was a riot,
Lady of the Studio Dog,
5:30 p.m. Portland time, the Portland police tweeted that the riot has subsided. They will patrol downtown Portland as things continue to de-escalate, but they also sent out a tweet telling people not to come out. If you live in Portland, stay away from downtown, as the protest had turned into a riot. And we talked about Germany as well as in Paris. There were some violent protests and riots that have erupted there as well, but I'd say a pretty quiet day. You know, a lot of people expected much more, but as Matt Bracken said, that it is a more European and less of an American tradition to protest on May Day. Now, one more interesting story. The U.S. has issued a travel alert for Europe, citing the threat of terror attacks for the next 4 months. The United States State Department issued a travel alert for Europe on Monday, saying the U.S. citizens should be aware of a continued threat of terror throughout the whole continent of Europe, citing recent incidents in France, Russia, Sweden, the United Kingdom, and said the Islamic State and Al-Qaeda have the ability to plan and execute terrorist attacks in Europe. So there you have that, and that'll do it for us tonight. Until tomorrow, stay safe, God bless, have a great evening, and say goodnight to Batman.